innoverend, entousiasties en oprecht. 100.5.
Dagbreek hier op 100.5 FM. Ons gesels met mense wat sê hulle is besig om Bobbiane te red en hoekom moet Bobbiane redding nodig? Wat is die situasie rondom dit? Jenny Trethewen?
Trethewen.
Yeah.
Ek het dit reg gekry. Did I get it?
Did I get it right?
Ah.
And Dr. Paula Pabesworth. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Wow.
Well, Baboon Matters, that is a big organization. It's small, but it does a big job.
Yeah.
It's got a big weight on
worldwide.
Its shoulders. Tell us about Baboon Matters, Jenny.
Baboon Matters is a very, very tiny little NGO, and we've been around. I've been working with baboons for 30 years, but Baboon Matters started only in 2001. And yes, we are taking on baboon advocacy and trying to get sustainable, non-lethal methods of management for baboons across South Africa. So you're right, it's a very big task because people have very entrenched mindsets. And I think it's become all too acceptable to work in a certain way. And so we are challenging people to think outside the box, to use their brains, and to come up with ways that actually work in the long term.
For 30 years, baboons have been close to your heart. How? How did that happen?
Well, 30 years ago in Komaki, the way of dealing with baboons was through lethal management, so the entire troop was killed. And I just thought, you know, there's got to be something different. So I started working with the animal.
Mm.
And they say there's an expression in primatology: once you go baboon, you can never go back. they are extremely, you know, intelligent. They are emotional. We spent a delightful 3 hours watching them yesterday, and it's like watching the most dramatic soap opera you've ever seen.
Complex relationships. Yeah, very
complicated.
Yeah, definitely. Let me maybe direct this next question to Dr. Pabesworth. Welcome to South Africa. I know you've been traveling the world.
But it's like coming home.
It's home. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Home. So baboons, what currently is the general perception about baboons in terms of why are they being dealt with lethally?
It's a complicated issue, but I think baboons are challenging. They're too smart, a little bit too smart for their own good.
Okay.
But I think as well as with all non-human primates, if you have a strategy, it may work for a year and then it stops working. They habituate, they learn, and so you've always got to be a little bit one ahead of them. So I think, you know, it's a matter of thinking creatively, and that's what I've been doing in India. And rhesus macaques, they're another one that's a little bit too smart for their own good.
Yes, they are.
They know how to take your smartphone and get you to trade them a bunch of bananas
for
it.
They do, yeah. I've actually watched a documentary on that, and they are incredibly, incredibly intelligent. So the lethal manners that baboons are being dealt with is trapping and shooting. Maybe poisoning. Is that the big three at the moment?
Yeah, that's the main thing that's happening. And, you know, the thing is that we all know there's more and more pressure on land.
Yep.
So less and less wild available land, and more and more, whether it's agriculture, tourism, urban sprawl, or just intensive farming. So now the main methods are shooting, trapping, and of course poisoning. And
what would be the reason that you would want to get rid of a baboon or a troop of baboons on your farm, land,
plantation?
Yeah. What? Why?
But I think it's like, obviously you don't want them in your plantation, but the problem has, as I understand it, I mean, I'd love to meet with growers and just go out on their plantation and see what they're doing and how they're doing it, because my understanding is that they'll typically put these big trap cages in the middle of the plantation and then they bait it with mealies.
Yeah.
And the baboons come. But the problem is that the damage intensifies all around that trap cage. So in essence,
obviously they're on their way there, and
they're drawing.
Yeah,
you're bringing them in.
Oh, I see.
And so what you don't want to do is you want to remove those trap cages, and you have this buffer zone around your plantation. And
that's
what my idea is that you encourage them to stay there. You do everything you can to draw them out of your plantation and to stay out.
The other thing I think that there's a very big misperception about among people who are trying to keep baboons away There's all ways of thinking. So if you get rid of the so-called problem animal,
yes,
then the others have all lost the
interest.
But in actual fact, oftentimes, most times, the birds have such a hierarchical society.
Yeah.
So the ones who are dominating the food sources are your dominant males and females. Now you take them out, and because they're dominant, they don't allow the others more access. So you take them out of the equation.
Many more.
And you allow more in.
Yeah.
So again, you've got to start thinking in new ways and start thinking of changing ways of doing things, because the ways that things have been going for the past hundreds of years in terms of baboon management are still escalating.
Perhaps let's talk about the cause of the problem here. Baboons are causing multi-million rands of damage per farm because they strip the bark off young trees. Let's call it any plantation. They strip the bark off the younger trees because it's juicy and succulent and a source of minerals, vitamins, and etc. And so they understand that they do this so the young trees don't get a chance to grow, which means future prospects of financial income for the farm is damaged, and so on. This is one of the problems, and obviously then the product, the fruits or whatever the case might be on these specific farms, are then plundered by the baboons as well. And for that reason, they are being hunted and shot and killed and so on. And you said, as an organization, we don't want it's not necessary. There are other ways of dealing with baboons besides lethal matters.
Right.
Does that encapsulate more or less the situation?
That's exactly what I wanted to do. So if you can figure out what it is that they're getting from the pine,
okay,
you can supplement it. And so in my area of expertise is actually self-medication. So I'm interested in how animals maintain their health in the wild. So if you look at what exactly, how much bark do baboons typically eat?
And why?
And it's only 3% of their diet. So in my field, when you have a food source that's something really tiny like that.
Yeah.
I mean, so in the Western Cape, the baboons I followed, 40% of their diet was acacia seeds. It's 40%.
Correct.
So when you get 3%, that says to me, it's something more medicinal. And so we can find those compounds and we can supplement them in the buffer zone. So they don't need to come into the plantation, but we have to try.
We have to try. I think that's the big thing, is that I've been sitting on the plantation, on the baboon damage interest group, had a number of names over the years.
Yeah.
Since 2006, and from 2006 until now, we don't have a conclusive answer why do the baboons do it. There's things are suggested, it could be stress, it could be this, it could be that.
They're naughty.
But as Paul has said, if it's such a small percentage that we've got to look and see what it is, and then we can start coming up with solutions. So, but the thing is, I think what we feel very strongly is that, Paula touched on it at the beginning, is that the wheels work very slowly. So if you're looking at getting a research project in place and it takes 7 years, you know, 500 baboons are killed annually. That's in Cape Town, we've only got 500 baboons. So if it takes 3 years to get a research proposal in place and then another 3 years for that to come out, 6 years later, how many baboons have you killed?
No. All of them, yeah.
Well, this morning we're having a very interesting conversation, because that is what you guys are looking for. You are just looking to make contact and to have conversations. Baboon Matters, Jenny Trethowen is with us in the studio, and also Dr. Paula Pepsworth, primatologist. And we're talking about finding alternative ways to deal with baboons causing havoc on farms. It was very interesting, Dr. Paula, that you were saying you're kind of the perfect translator, because you've got the love for primates, but you also come from a farming background, and so you understand farmers' side of things.
Absolutely. It's been such a privilege for me to work in various parts of the world, and I feel the plight of the farmer. I understand how challenging it is, and they are incredibly smart, as not only baboons, but all primates are smart. And I work also with chimpanzees in Uganda. So I do understand, and I think that, you know, we need to talk to one another. Farmers have so much knowledge and wisdom about what has worked, what doesn't work, and I want to listen to them and I want to help them. And I think that, you know, the only way that we can solve these problems is to work together. for whatever reason, you've had academics on one side, activists on the other side, and we just need to kind
of farm is trying to farm.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And we just need to come together and, you know, join forces. I don't have a dog in the race, you know, in the sense I don't have a plantation.
Either.
I'm an American. Yeah. Yeah. I'm a guest in your country. And it's always such a privilege for me. You know, poor Americans, we don't have any of our own monkeys. So we have to go to other people's countries and borrow theirs. You know, how pathetic is that?
Let's talk about baboons for a second. It's obviously from different points of views and different opinions about the baboons. For the farmers, mostly it's a destructive force on their farms. But they do have a critical role in ecosystems. Mm. What contributions, or what is the role of a baboon or a baboon troop in a certain... Let's close an ecosystem off for a second. And the actual role that a baboon or a troop of baboons can play in a 100 square kilometer area. How do they contribute?
It's particularly for seed dispersal. So, okay. I mean, especially where
they messy eaters, yeah.
Yeah, no, well, it's like what they eat and then what you excrete.
Okay.
So, you know, especially in these areas where these just a remnant of Afro-Montane that you're trying desperately to keep these forests like somehow intact. And they go in, they eat the fruits, and then they excrete them when it goes through the gut tract. This is too much information.
No, not at all. This is the show where anything goes.
Yeah, and then you're hoping that new trees will grow.
So disbursement.
And also after fires, particularly, you know, we've had so many big fires in the Western Cape. After fires, your pioneer growth is often the more vigorous growth.
Yes.
The baboons may eat that, and in a sense, they're putting it back, allowing the more specialist plants a chance to come through. So, of course, every animal's got its role to play in
yes.
the ecosystem and keep that balance.
But there's an important role with regards to that as well. How do you both control the overpopulation of baboons where conditions are very good for them in farmers' plantations where they maybe grow fruit trees? And how do you balance that out with underpopulation in certain areas where these disbursements don't happen? Is that something that you, as Baboon Matters, focus on as well, is the population management?
We would love, what a great question, thank you. We would love there to be a national census of baboons because on all the anecdotal evidence that we are getting, what we're seeing is that there's more and more pockets where there are baboons
yes.
and they're not baboons at all. So it seems to me that they're almost congregating in areas where they are finding easy food and water.
Of course.
And you've got huge stretches where you just simply don't see baboons at all anymore. So I think it would be absolutely fantastic. It's Paul and I have spoken about it for years. It would be such a wonderful prize if we could do a proper national census and understand. I mean, here in Mpumalanga, what puzzles me about this situation in the plantation, if you look at the numbers of baboons being killed, it's really almost creating possibly creating a sink.
Is that the feeling at the moment? Are we moving towards endangerment for baboons? I know we don't have any figures and facts, but are we moving towards that point?
Look at, you know, Cape Town only has 500 baboons left.
Not a lot.
And I'll say, you know, as I've driven across the country, you just don't see them like you used to.
No, you don't. It's true.
And I think the sad thing is, like, if you understand baboon society, so they're matriarchal. So it's the females are in charge and it's the males that leave. So when they get to sexual maturity, they leave the troop that they're born into and they need to find a new troop. So they
genetics, disbursement, and
exactly.
so on and so on.
And as if you have fewer populations, where do they go? And that's actually when you have a lot of havoc.
Okay.
They're on their own, they don't have the support of the troop, and then they get into trouble.
So we might be moving towards a cliff, and all of a sudden population numbers are just going to drop because there's no variety in genetic pools.
It may. Look, we can't say that at the moment. We can't say that with any degree of certainty. But what we can say is that there's enough alarming anecdotal evidence to suggest that. I mean, we did a sponsored trip to Namaqualand 2 years ago, and I was just astonished. I mean, if anyone wants to see baboons, I do. I look for baboons everywhere. And we just saw so few baboons. I mean, it was really alarming to me how few baboons we saw. So we can't say that at this point, but what we can say is that we are aware of the damage that they can cause. We are aware of the stress that people are living under in this day and age. So for us, it's about finding a way to coexist. It's about, you know, the other big thing at the moment is job creation, skills development. We could be training young people. We could be, you know, bringing these youngsters up and giving them a love of environment, of management, of law enforcement, and so on. So it's not just about baboons. It's about, you know, creating a better opportunity for everybody.
If we're looking at numbers, figures, you were saying 500 baboons being killed a year. In digging into the news reports, you know, I found articles written about mass graves in the plantation of baboons and things like that. Are the current ways of trying to deal with baboons, do they seem to be working?
No, they're not working.
They're not effective.
That's the problem. So they've been doing the same thing for 50 years, as far as I can tell, and what I've read from other research that's been done. And that's basically what they were trying to say. You know, I mean, gosh, isn't that the definition of insanity? You do the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. It's not working.
Well, if it was working logically, one would say we would be seeing a huge decrease in the damage to the plantation.
Mm. Which we're not.
The other thing, though, is we don't actually know, is all the damage being caused by baboons? I mean, from what I hear, it can also be from porcupines. It can be from rats. It can be from bush pigs. So, you know, we talked to one plantation manager, and they said, you know, for 2 years, we had camera traps set up. We had like a webcam.
Yeah.
In 2 years' time, they never got one image of baboon bark stripping.
That's very interesting. So it's an expensive experiment to do, which is why probably the least expensive thing would be to get rid of the baboons by lethal ways, and see if the problem stops. So it's another experiment.
But you've tried that. They've tried that.
And the thing is that so we were aware of the cost implications, and we're aware of the stress of the industry. So what Baboon Matters did is we did crowdfunding. And because this is an interesting fact that not many people know, but two PhD studies have been done, and they prove conclusively that the majority of people, between 70 and 80% of people, do not want baboons killed as management options. So you've got to look at the whole thing. You know, it's what is a popular choice? What is a useful choice? What is a cost-effective choice? What is going to create jobs? And so we thought, we've been at loggerheads with the pine industry in the past. We don't want to be.
Yeah.
So we started crowdfunding, and we didn't raise a heck of a lot, but we managed to raise 65,000 rand. Thank you to everybody
it helps.
Who supported.
Yeah.
We got sponsorship from Fiat, who have loaned us a bucky so we can get around. Martin's Haven has accommodated us. And so we came, and Paula put together a proposal which has got ethical clearance. It's been peer-reviewed. Mm. It's on the highest level. And we came and said, let's just find a solution.
Let's talk. That's wonderful. If you want to join the conversation with Jenny and Paula, info@baboonmatters.org.za.
Ons gesels vanoggend met Jenny Trethewen.
Trethewen.
Kan nie.
Is that okay, close?
I'm so
okay, I've got it. It's a proper, very proper English surname.
Behaving like an ape. It's not a bad thing, is it? And Dr.
She's
Paula,
liking you more and more.
Dr. Paula Pebsworth, primatologist, net hier op Dagbreek op 100.5 FM vir jou, but Dinsdagochtend. So, we had a question during the break, actually, whilst we're having a conversation. So, primates are primates, and they all vary in different levels of social complexity as well as intelligence, but vervet monkeys at this specific school, they're causing problems where they Rensha sent in a question with regards to where they're causing a problem with the kids. There's some aggression from the monkey side as well, and food's being taken, and they sort of attack, or it's being
harassing.
Perceived as an attack. What do you do in a situation with this where they just come out the bush, they attack the kids, they take their food, they sort of go away?
I think a lot of it is about education and looking at the problem holistically. So where are the, you know, it is about as much as that you don't want the monkeys coming in and getting the easy food rewards, you also want the children to know how to behave around the monkeys so that they feel safe and it doesn't escalate into a conflict situation. So a lot of that is about education. Unfortunately, we don't have resources to be here, but yeah. I'm sure that there are other animal welfare organizations who may be able to step in and provide education.
Like the Parks Board, maybe?
Possibly. Yeah. And what we will do is when we get back, we've been given a couple of names and we will put them on our website and our Facebook pages, because as I said to you in the break, you know, in Kamaki there was a whole troop of baboons used to come through the school. It's as much about teaching the children how to behave and what to do when they see the monkeys or baboons so that they are safe, as well as making sure that they don't come into the school areas.
So what you're saying is look at the reason. Why are they coming through there? Why are they keep coming back? Is there easy access to food? Kids walking around with lunch boxes, they start to recognize this as food sources and then attack or try and get hold of it.
Yeah. And maybe some quick tips we still have you here. Quick tips when we encounter any kind of primate,
be it a
vivid monkey or a baboon.
No food and no staring. Staring at monkeys is an act of aggression. So look away, but you know, no food. Don't give them food.
The most important thing of one message: never, ever, ever feed a baboon. And I would like people to understand this very clearly.
It's not cute.
Baboons are not grateful because baboons are hierarchical. So if you give them food, what you're actually saying is, I'm subordinate.
Submitting.
Exactly.
Okay.
I'm the boss of you.
So they're not sitting there saying, oh wow, that was so kind, they gave me some food. They say, you fool, you gave up your food for me. Don't ever, ever feed baboons or monkeys.
Wow, so you submit when you submit to the baboon when you feed it.
Yes.
And then hierarchically, yeah. You are then below.
Exactly.
This
they're the
baboon.
Boss of you. They have a right to come and take it.
Yeah, if you watch baboon behavior, the dominant ones will often go and take food from the lower ranking ones.
Yes.
So by giving food straight off, you're already saying,
I'm
subordinate. Yeah. So the call of today's talk is to get farmers, plantation, landowners, anyone who deals with baboons to come up and have a conversation, to invite you guys. You are in Mpumalanga.
Exactly.
For how long are you still here?
I fly out of Joburg on the 18th, but we need to hear from people soon. So we have, like Jenny had said, we've raised money. So the things I want to try won't cost the farmer anything. So I want to actually come and see their damage. I want to take some samples of the sapwood and the bark. And if I can get some fecal samples, that would, you know, be really helpful.
Yeah.
So, you know, at no cost to them. So give us a call.
And soon.
Yeah. Soon.
And
please.
Do that soon. info@baboonmatters.org.za. Or you can contact Radio Laufeld and we'll put you into contact with the ladies. Jenny and Paula, thank you very much for your
pleasure.
Time and for your passion. I hope you have a fruitful time in Mpumalanga.
Thank you.
Dis baie snaaks. As jy met Jenny en Dr. Paula wil in contact tree met hulle gesels oor hierdie situasie. Hulle is hier om te help met die Bobbejaan probleem. Om te kyk wat jy kan doen om 'n koste-effektiewe manier te kry om van Bobbejane ontslaat raak is seker die verkeerde woord om te gebruik om hulle weg te hou van jou plantasie af sodat hulle nie jou opbrengs splinder nie. Of as jy iemand ken wat sal kan baat vind rondom dit.
Waarvan ek hou is hulle sê nie hulle het die antwoorde nie.
Ja, hulle
het nie klaar die planne nie. Ja. Hulle wil kom praat en sien kan ons 'n alternatiewe plan kry. Dis waar dit gaan.
Jou familie radio. Jy luister na jou keuse op 100.5.